Visit our website at shoestring.org. Web hosting is provided by Big Biz Internet Services at bigbiz.com.
Please visit Shoestring Radio Theater's new Facebook page for schedules, links to listen to radio shows on demand, and other information about Shoestring Radio Theater.
Welcome to Shoestring Radio Theater. We now present Velda, Girl Detective in The Naked Milkmaid, written by Ron Miller, directed by Paul Dougherty, and produced by Monica Sullivan at Rave Light Theater in San Francisco.
I was on my way down to the corner to get a cheeseburger and beer for lunch at Joe's when I heard someone call, "Hey, Velda!" It was Hieronymus Kaplan, the elderly art dealer who keeps a little gallery halfway down the block. "Hi, Mr. Kaplan. How are you doing?"
"I could do worse, Velda. I could do worse. Come in and have a cup of tea with me."
"Well, I was just on my way to get a cheeseburger at Joe's."
"Oy, then come in you must and have some good tea first. Your stomach it will brace for the awful ordeal that is to follow."
As usual, he was hard to say no to. And besides, I really wasn't in any particular hurry. So I sipped some of his tea and talked about nothing in particular as I waited for him to get around to the point, since it was obvious from the get-go that he had something he wanted to tell me.
"So, how's business been?"
"Fair to middling. You know how it is."
"Are you too busy, maybe, to take on a new job, do you suppose?"
"If you have something you'd like for me to do for you, Mr. Kaplan, I'd always have time to..."
"No, no, it's not for me. For one of my friends it is. Do you know of The Naked Milkmaid?"
"My new stripper at Slotnick's?"
"No, it's a painting by an artist named Guillermo Fumetti. Not a great painting, or even a very good one, but a very rare, very famous one. Here, let me show you."
He rummaged around for a minute and dragged out a huge book and opened it. He flipped through a few pages, said, "Ah," and turned the volume around so I could see the page he turned to. It was a full-page reproduction of a painting of a nude woman. It was okay, I thought. Something like the stuff you see on calendars, though to tell you the truth, I'd run across a lot better figures at Slotnick's.
"That is Fumetti's Naked Milkmaid."
"And?"
"It's been stolen."
"Stolen? Why? You said it wasn't all that great, so how much could it have been worth?"
"Not so much as other paintings of that period in school, perhaps, but it is easily worth $25,000, maybe $30,000.
"Who would have believed it? Someone stole this from you, Mr. Kaplan?"
"No, it was stolen sometime last night, or early this morning, from the Schuyler J. Crosby Museum. That is a privately endowed museum uptown. The friend I mentioned, Crampton Spoolberg, is the curator. He called me not an hour ago to tell me the news."
"I'm not sure what you want me to do, Mr. Kaplan. The police..."
"No, no, notifying the police is the last thing Spoolberg wants to do. Tomorrow is the annual board of directors meeting. It is when the benefactors of the museum decide on each year's operating funds. There has been much talk lately of cutting back, and the theft of a famous painting only 24 hours earlier might be seen by some as reason enough to withdraw their financial support. You understand."
"This Crampton Spoolberg wants the theft kept quiet?"
"That. But even more so, he wants the painting returned. You see, an art museum in California is planning a retrospective of Fumetti's work, and The Naked Milkmaid was to be its centerpiece. You see, the painting had long been thought forgotten and was only recovered a few years ago as part of a Nazi hoard in France. There has been much publicity about this loan, and the directors are surely going to want to see the painting."
"Well, it sounds as though your friend needs a good private investigator."
"That is exactly what I told him. And I told him I knew just the person for the job."
"Me?"
"Exactly."
"Gee, Mr. Kaplan, I really appreciate this and all, but it sounds way out of my league. I'd better go on and get my cheeseburger."
"He will pay you $500.
That, I decided, would buy me a lot of cheeseburgers. I called this Crampton Spoolberg from Mr. Kaplan's phone and made an appointment for 2:00, which just gave me time to get back to my apartment, wolf down a peanut butter sandwich, No substitute for one of Joe's cheeseburgers, I can tell you, when you'd really been set on one. Shower and change clothes. I splurged on a cab to the museum, figuring, what the hell, it was coming out of a $500 fee, and found Mr. Crampton Spulberg waiting for me like a kid waiting for Santa Claus on Christmas morning.
Miss Bellinghausen?
That's me, yes.
Oh, Mr. Kaplan recommended you very highly.
Yes, Mr. Kaplan and I have had a long professional relationship.
He told you what happened about our recent loss?
He did, and that you need the painting returned by tomorrow morning?
No later than 11. That's when the board meeting is scheduled. I can't begin to tell you what a catastrophe it would be if the board were to discover that the painting has been stolen.
How was the painting taken? Surely you have security precautions?
Well, of course.
Uh-huh. Well, why don't you just tell me exactly what happened?
At 7 this morning, Reedley, the night watchman, heard a loud crash in the street outside the museum. He opened the door, looked out, and saw that two automobiles had collided, one of them thrown onto the sidewalk just outside the entrance. He stepped outside and called to ask if anyone was hurt.
How far outside the door did he go?
He said not more than a pace or two, and I believe him. Reenley's a solid, reliable man, the best we have. In any event, as you saw when you came in this afternoon, there are only 8 steps down to the sidewalk, so the car was practically right in front of him. The driver's side door opened, and a young woman emerged.
A woman?
Yes, quite a beautiful one, according to Reenley, who was not normally given to hyperbole. She staggered and fell against the car, and she would have fallen to the walk if it hadn't been there to support her. Reenley is certain. He saw blood on her face, her hands, and her dress. She said she was hurt and needed help, and Reenley said he would call for an ambulance and went back inside.
He shut the door behind him?
Of course.
Of course. Let me make a stab at what happened next, Mr. Spulberg. The ambulance arrived, and there was no one there.
Exactly. The woman had vanished. The police were summoned naturally, and they declared that both cars had been reported stolen earlier that night.
The guard didn't see who was in the other car, the one still in the street?
No. He never thought to look, his attention being taken by the young woman.
I can imagine. Well, look, might if I see this Mr. Reenley, ask him a couple of questions? If he'll just tell me where I can find him.
Certainly. Although he'd normally be off duty in the afternoons, I asked him to come in, knowing you might want to ask him some questions. The guards have a small office beneath the main stairs. You saw them as you came in.
I told him I knew just what he was talking about, and found the officer after looking around for only a couple of minutes. Reenley was a tough-looking old bird who could have been anything between 50 and 70. He looked like he'd been whittled out of 6 feet of jerky, and it was pretty clear that it'd be hard to pull a fast one on him. It was also clear from the moment I stepped into his office that he had a good eye for women, as he gave me a once-over that made me think he could have drawn me from memory. I asked him how far outside the building he'd gone.
Not more than a pace or two, if you're thinking someone slipped in behind me.
Mr. Spulberg said you told him the girl who got out of the car was pretty. Can you describe her more specifically?
Sure can. She was middling height, a lot shorter than you, ma'am, maybe 5'4", 5'5". Slick little figure, short blonde hair, kind of wavy, round face, and a pert little turned-up nose.
Notice what color her eyes were?
Kind of hard to tell, it being not quite light yet, but I'd say they was blue.
Did you notice what she was wearing, Mr. Reenley?
Just a pretty little dress, what do you call them, a sundress, like you see girls wearing in the park, blue like her eyes, kind of short, shoulder knees, and cut real low in front, you know what I mean? One of the shoulder straps was broke, and she kind of kept fidgeting with it.
I knew what he meant all right. Just as I knew for sure a brass band could have walked into the museum behind him, and he wouldn't have seen a thing. Who first noticed that the painting was missing?
Mr. Spulberg did, ma'am. First thing he got here this morning.
When would that have been?
10 o'clock on the dot, every day, like clockwork. The picture had been cut out of its frame, like with a razor or something, and you'd have thought it'd been his own mother, the way he bawled and carried on. I wanted to call the police right then, but he told me no. He'd have to have it handled carefully, what with the board coming and all.
I went back to Spielberg's office. I told him I needed to do some looking around and would report back to him as soon as I found out anything. He looked pretty unhappy about that. What the hell did he expect already? I brought up the matter of my fee.
Yes. Mr. Kaplan mentioned something about expenses.
In advance.
Of course. I'll have the office prepare a check for you.
Cash would be a little more useful given the time restraints.
I understand. You must appreciate that all I'm interested in is the return of the painting. There will be no questions asked, no charges pressed, so long as we get it back in good condition.
If you were to offer a reward, that might help encourage things considerably.
You're probably right. Feel free to offer any amount up to, say $5,000.
I swallowed hard. $5,000. Jeez. I hadn't seen that much money in one place in my entire life. I took a cab back to Fifth Street, thinking pretty furiously the whole way. It was obvious to me what had happened. Someone slipped in behind the night watchman when he'd stepped out the door, cut the painting out of the frame, and merely hid until the museum opened. All I needed to do was find out who the blonde girl and her accomplices were. I had the driver drop me off at Joe's Diner. Joe automatically brought me a cup of black coffee and said,
"What are you all dolled up for? Someone died?"
"Here's a 10 spot. Go buy yourself some clean underwear. And while you're at it, fix me up with cheeseburger. All the trimmings."
"Jeez, Velda, I'm sorry. Was it someone close that left you this?"
"Nah, I got a job. I think I could use your help on this one." I told him all about what had happened at the museum that morning. "You got any ideas about where I could start looking? I haven't a clue where to ask about finding anyone who specializes in art theft or fancy driving."
"I ain't never heard of no girl around here like you described. But if you want to hire someone for a job in this part of town, you couldn't do no better than talking to Luigi Sporcolini."
"Sporcolini? The guy that runs the gym over on Bluebell?"
"He's the one. He's kind of a clearinghouse for out-of-work hoods. You need a job done? He's probably got the man for the job. Especially if you want a guy who works cheap."
There was a big lug at the door of Sporcolini's gym who wasn't about to let me in.
"Ladies ain't allowed in. It ain't decent."
"Holy Mary, Mother of God!"
I turned, my ears ringing, and saw, not surprisingly, something I at first took to be a diesel engine, which turned out to be just the largest human being I'd ever seen.
"Velda Bellinghausen!"
"I..."
"Hey! You don't remember me? Luigi Sporcolini! Your biggest fan! Say, your big lug, you don't remember the great Velda Bellinghausen? Oh, Jesus Christ, God Almighty! Oh, she was the best, I tell ya! I see her 3, 4, 5 times every week! Oh, what she could do with a fan! Oh, Jesus, she was great! Come on in, come on in! Velda Bellinghausen is welcome at the Southeast West Side Gentlemen's Athletic Club anytime! Anytime! And don't you ever forget it!"
I followed Sporcolini into the gymnasium, where a couple of dozen men were working out in a ring. The place stank of sweat, urine, and cigar smoke. The place went silent by degrees as the inhabitants gradually noticed me. I'd felt less self-conscious half-naked on the runway at Slotnick's than I did at that moment.
"Hey, come into my office. So, what can I do for you, Velda? Anything you ask, I am your slave."
"I'm, looking for someone."
"Yeah?
Well, look, if I needed someone to, let's say, arrange a car accident, I mean something that looked like an accident, but where no one really got hurt, you know what I mean? Who might I ask for?"
"I can tell you, Velda, friend to friend, that insurance fraud is something you should not get involved in."
"It's nothing like that. There was an accident this morning in front of the Crosby Museum. The drivers of the cars disappeared, and I'd like to find out who they might have been. That's all."
"Oh, you just wait a minute, right there. Whatever Velda wants, if Luigi's got it, it's hers too. Hey, Roscoe, come over here a minute, will ya?"
"Yeah, boss."
"The lady'd like to know something. Whatever she wants to know, you tell her. Okay, Roscoe?
Roscoe said sure. It was Jake by him. So I asked him if he knew anyone who could fake a car accident. And Roscoe said, yeah, and that someone had recently been asking him the very same question. Really? Who? When?
Some dame.
A girl? What did she look like?
Oh, excuse me. I mean, gosh, she was really a looker. Blonde, blue eyes, cute as hell. Maybe only come to hear on me.
Did she say what she wanted a driver for?
Not exactly.
What did you tell her?
What could I tell her? The best driver I know's Noodles O'Hibble. He used to do a lot of stunt work when they was still making movies over in Jersey, and he did a lot of running during Prohibition. I mean, I gone straight. All my pals know that. But that ain't no reason I can't send a little work their way. Them's what ain't gone straight. You know what I mean?
I think so. Where can I find this friend of yours, Nibbles?
That's easy. He's the bouncer over at Harry's.
Noodles O'Hibble was easy to find, since he was the only thug at Harry's who wasn't drinking. He looked at me in much the same way he probably would have regarded a specimen of calcite at the Museum of Natural History, which is to say, without much interest at all. I figured the only approach that would work with him would be the direct one. So I swallowed hard, walked up to the big ox, and asked, "Say, Noodles, who hired you to stage that accident this morning?"
The dame. She hired me. Say, what's it to you?
Nothing you need to worry about. You know who this woman was? She tell you her name?
Nope. But I know who she is.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I got the idea and slipped a sawbuck out of my purse.
Yeah. Her name's Lydia.
Lydia?
Yeah. Lydia Whipple. So she says.
You know where to find her?
Maybe.
I pulled out another sawbuck.
She's got a room over at the Arcadia. At least she said she did. Yesterday.
That when she set things up?
Yeah.
You have any idea what was going on?
Nope.
You know who else she might have hired?
Nope.
The Lummox had been hired to lift a car, fake a crash, and walk away from it. So far as he was concerned, it was all history, so there didn't seem to be much else for me to do but hie myself to the Arcadia, which I knew was a third-class hotel over on Cladmer that mainly catered to transients, traveling salesmen and their ilk. I remembered one of the bellhops, a kid named Wilmer, who used to hang around the stage door at Slotnick's looking for any odd job. He didn't fool any of us girls, who gave him the eyeful he'd come for, along with the occasional errand to run. I gave him a high sign and went back out to the sidewalk where, a few minutes later, he slipped out to join me.
Hiya, Velda. How's tricks?
Tricks are fine, Wilmer. How'd you like to earn a fin?
Heck yeah! Who do I kill?
All I want is some information. And maybe a little help.
Anything for you, baby.
You got a blonde here named Lydia? Lydia Whipple. Blue eyes, cute, about your size?
A real looker.
So I understand.
She's a hot little number that checked in just the day before yesterday, but she's registered as Lucia Work.
That must be her. The initials are the same at any rate. You know she's in right now?
Sure. She's been since this morning. So far as I know, she hasn't left her room since then.
Can you find out if she's made or received any calls?
Well, I don't know.
I slipped him another five.
Thanks. Let me ask the operator. She'll do anything for me. Give me 10 minutes.
I'll meet you across the street in the drugstore. Can you get away then?
Shoot, I can do anything I want. See you later, alligator.
It was more like 20 minutes, and I was just finishing my chocolate soda when Wilmer came swaggering through the door. This signified nothing special. He always walked that way. He took the stool next to mine and ordered a cherry coke.
She's there, all right. Just sent out for some Chinese, a chow mein and an egg roll. I got a list of her calls here. I got all the numbers of the calls she made. Ain't got the numbers of the incoming calls, naturally, but I got their times.
There were only about a dozen calls or thereabouts, all of them to the same number, with the exception of one call each to the drugstore and the Chinese restaurant. There was only one incoming call, made about half an hour earlier. Any idea where this call came from?
No way of telling. Hilda said it was a man, though, and he sounded pretty angry when he asked for Miss Work's room.
I need to get upstairs to see this girl, Wilmer. Think you can do that?
Are you kidding?
He held me up for another fin, but 5 minutes later I was on the 8th floor, standing in front of room 822. I knocked on the door.
Who is it?
Chow mein and an egg roll.
I didn't. Who the hell are you? You can't push your way in here like that.
Renly and Wilmer weren't kidding. The girl was a looker for sure.
Who the hell are you?
I'm the person you're going to give the painting to.
What are you talking about?
Come off it. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
If you're not out of here in 2 seconds, I'm calling the cops.
Be my guest. Do you want the number? I've got it memorized. Here, I'll give it to the operator for you. I reached for the telephone and picked up the receiver. She leaped across the room like a gazelle and snatched it out of my hand, slamming it back onto the cradle. She didn't look so cute anymore.
What do you want?
All I want is the picture back.
What picture?
The picture you stole from the museum this morning. Give it to me, and that'll be the end of it. All the museum wants is the picture back. No questions asked.
I can't give it back.
You sold it already?
No. No, it's not for sale. Not exactly.
What do you mean, not exactly?
I don't care about the painting or the money. All I want is to keep it for another hour. Then you can have it back.
What difference does another hour make? I don't get it.
I can't tell you. Who are you, anyway?
My name's Velda. Velda Bellinghausen. I'm a private investigator. The museum hired me to get the painting back. That's all they're interested in. You give me a good reason why I ought to wait an hour, and I'll give it to you. So long as I have your word, I get the picture back then.
Yes. That's all the longer I want it. After that, I don't care what you do with it. I'll probably be in jail by then anyway.
No, I promise you. If I get the painting back, no one's going to prosecute you. You can go scot-free.
That's not what I meant. I'll have killed someone. I'll be arrested for murder.
I don't get it.
Look, Velda, you look like you're okay. You're a woman. I think maybe you'll understand. You ever hear of a man named Hector Swaddle?
Swaddle? Sure, I think so. Small-time operator and would-be tough guy. Owns a string of roadhouses up north.
Uh-huh. Hector's from a little town up the Hudson. Same place I'm from. Place you've probably never heard of, I'm sure. He and my dad knew each other since they were kids, went to high school together. I guess no one could ever figure out why they ran around together since they were so different. My dad was a good student, always had a job. Hector was completely different. Wild, always in trouble. When the war came, they enlisted together. Only one of them came back.
Hector, I take it?
Yes. Dad was killed. I didn't find out how until just recently. But when Mom got the news, she took it awful hard. She just pined away until she died a couple of years later. When the war was over and Hector came back, he seemed to have an awful lot of money. Well, I never saw Hector after the war. No one around town saw much of him. Which was okay with everyone, I can tell you. It was okay by me, too, and I would have been glad to have forgotten him if I hadn't gotten a letter a couple weeks ago. It was from a soldier who'd been with my dad and Hector overseas. He told me he'd heard something awful about them. He thought that Hector killed my father!
Why?
Oh, they'd found a treasure! It was something the Germans had taken that rightfully belonged to someone else. Hector wanted to keep it, but my dad wouldn't have any of it and insisted they tell their superiors about the treasure. That's when Hector killed him!
This is all well and good, but what does it have to do with the painting?
Oh, I'm getting to that. After I got the letter, I started checking up on Hector. Found out everything I could about him. One of the things he did was collect art, and somewhere got it into his head that the painting he wanted more than anything else was that painting called The Naked Milkmaid.
You've got the painting here, I take it?
Uh-huh.
Can I see it?
You won't take it?
I won't take it. I just want to see it. She slipped off the bed and fumbled under the mattress, finally pulling out a large, flat package, about 15 by 20 inches or so. It was just a couple of sheets of corrugated cardboard held together by string. She laid this on the bed and untied it. Between the cardboard sheets was a rectangle of canvas. She turned it over, and there was the Naked Milkmaid. Not much, is it?
I guess not. But Hector wants it more than anything else in the world.
I don't get it. If you hate Hector as much as you seem to, why steal a painting for him?
It's bait.
So you stole the painting in order to lure Hector to you?
Sure.
What for? I mean, that's an awful lot of trouble to go to just to talk to someone.
Talk? Who wants to talk? I mean to kill the son of a bitch.
That's a little rough, isn't it? You don't know for sure he had anything to do with your dad's death. Just a letter from someone you've never met telling you about a rumor he heard. That's not much to justify a murder.
Yeah, you wouldn't think so, but...
Go on.
I never told anyone this before. Hector raped me, Miss Bellinghausen. He raped me just before he went overseas. I wasn't even 14 years old and was his best friend's daughter. And he raped me.
Well, you got a better reason there, I've got to admit.
Hector, what should I do?
Let him in. What else? She went to the door while I stood alongside it, my hand in my purse, gripping my nickel-plated 45. Go ahead, open it.
Come on in, Hector.
Lydia, what the hell?
Surprised?
If this is some sort of trick,
I've got your painting, Hector.
As I heard him enter the room, I swung the door shut and leaned against it. The man turned to face me.
Who the hell are you?
My name's Velda. You must be Mr. Swaddle.
What's going on here? If this is some sort of scam...
I've got your painting right here, Hector, like I said.
She turned the canvas around on the bed so it faced him. I could see him stiffen and his hands clench. He took a step toward the bed, but the girl stopped him with a gesture that held a great deal of authority, namely a .38 police special that had suddenly appeared in her hand. Just to be on the safe side, I pulled out my Gat as well.
Not so fast, Hector. I forgot to tell you my price. I don't want a penny for the painting. I just want you to tell me what happened to my dad. That's all.
What do you mean, what happened to your dad? You know what happened.
Do I? All I know is he bled to death in some godforsaken village in France.
Well, that's what happened.
You want to see something, Velda? Come on over here and take a look at this.
Keeping my hand in my bag, I made a wide circle around Swaddle until I got to the bed. No accounting for taste, I suppose.
Turn it over.
I did. It was just the back of a painting, so far as I could tell. I picked it up and looked more closely. Written in some faded, brownish ink was the word Hector. I took the canvas over to the table lamp by the bed and held it under the light. There were two more words, barely distinguishable from the color of the fabric. Killed me. Hector killed me. I looked up to the girl who still held the gun on Swaddle. What the hell?
That
was all the further she got, because she took her eyes from the man for just a split second, which was too long. He sprang for her with a speed I would never have credited him with, slapping the gun from her hand with his left arm, while the other hit her face like a pile driver. In a flash, he had his gun in his hand and pointed between my eyes. The hole in the end of it looked as big as the Holland Tunnel.
All right, you. Hand over that painting. That gun in your mitt don't scare me none. Ain't no dame can handle a rod.
You think not? There wasn't much to do until the cops arrived, but talked to Lydia. She told me that her dad and Hector had found a cache of Nazi loot, mostly paintings and other artwork. Lydia's father had wanted to turn it over to the authorities, while Hector'd wanted to cash in on it. They'd fought, and Hector'd shot him, leaving him to bleed to death while he hid as many paintings as he could. There was one painting he didn't get, however, the one on which Lydia's father had managed to scrawl three damning words in his own blood. Lydia went with me when I returned the painting to Spulberg the next morning. He cried like a baby when he saw it. I collected the $5,000 reward, no questions asked or answered, which we split 50-50. I invited her over to meet Joe and sprang for cheeseburgers and ice-cold Pabst Blue Ribbon for everyone. My treat.
That concludes Velda, Girl Detective in The Naked Milkmaid, written by Ron Miller, directed by Paul Dougherty, and produced by Monica Sullivan at Ray of Light Theater in San Francisco. It starred Anne Stone as Velda, Jackie Blue as Lydia, Perry Whittle as Kaplan, Jonathan W. Wind as Spulberg, Jeff Goddard as Reenley, Brian Session as Hector, and Paul Dougherty as Sporcolini. Our co-producer was Steve Rubenstein. You can write to us in care of our producer, Monica Sullivan, at srt@shoestring.org. For more information on Shoestring, please visit our website at www.shoestring.org. For Shoestring Radio Theater, I'm Paul Daugherty. Thank you for joining us.